Hey yo, everybody, it's Mojo. What is this, show number three we're on now, fellas?
You know what? I've lost count. There's been so many.
There has, I think this, the third show. Apparently Mojo is, apparently it's published by Early 90s Image because we didn't quite stick to our monthly podcast schedule.
Steve Pat is our producer. Rob Liefeld is our director. it's all
90s bound. It's all 90s, early 90s. You know what? Those solicitations, they're just a tease. They don't actually mean anything. But so basically, yeah, I think that's just a little miscommunication between you and me. But Joe, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. I'm happy to be back. I'm glad you got over those naked photos I was posting in Canada. And I'm glad we could reunite for the reunion show. Well, show number three.
Yeah, no, it's all right. You know what? And you're probably right when you said the excuse that for those naked photos turning out the way they did is it's cold up here. And, you know, yeah, because of that.
Look, I was calling you the Irish Yeti. That's what I was calling you. And I shouldn't have done it. And I'm saying it publicly. I apologize. Literally and figuratively. A bigger man than I to forgive things like this, and it's appreciated.
You know what? The thing is, I mean, let's be honest, okay? It was kind of like a toad trying to escape from a forest or something, but basically, you know, I mean, I'm fat, I'm Canadian. What do you expect?
That's what makes this work.
All right, Tyler James is also on here. Doja, how do you feel slumming with us tonight?
Oh, it's always a pleasure. All these visual images, you know, you're not in comics if you don't think visually. And, well, I'm going to have nightmares after the picture you guys have been
painting. Well, yeah, you wish you weren't thinking visually now. In fact, you may never think visually again after that. So after the most awkward introduction ever, let's get on to talking some damn comics and stuff. First off, before you guys were on last time, we were just talking just about wrapping up the Kickstarter for the Oxymoron project you have going on. So obviously great success. Tyler, why don't you kind of run us through the end process here?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a process that's still going in terms of on the fulfillment side, obviously. You know, this is a project that I really kicked off last November when I conceded the idea and started reaching out to talented folks like Moldy and others to sort of join me on building this product. But then the July through August 30-day campaign was just, I mean, it was tremendous. It was a ton of work. Ton of just promotion and beating the drum about it, but man, like we really finished strong. I think we did somewhere in the $4,000 to $5,000 in the last day and a half, 2 days.
Wow!
I think more than that. And we finished raising a total of $26,000 on the dot and 450 backers on the dot. So
that's pretty damn cool. So what was the two things? Number one, remind me again, what was your original goal?
Original goal was 8,500. 8,500 would have basically seen us print a hardcover and me not going completely broke doing it. Now, as the campaign went on and we started, once we hit that goal, the focus really became making the camp, making the project and the rewards and things even better. So we added a series of bonuses, you know, throwing in bookmarks, throwing in mini prints, throwing in extra copies of our special Kickstarter variants of the Red 10. So a lot of cool things for Kickstarter backers. That both helped the goals or the amount of money raised increase. And then we really made the book a lot cooler. We increased it to sort of an oversized Walking Dead hardcover sized, to make the book even bigger. We were able to add some spot UV to the standard version of the printer of the book, and then we launched 10 variant covers. Mulvey is one of the artists on, which is just absolutely insane. I don't think I've ever seen anybody go that crazy with it. But
have you ever seen variant covers on a hardcover oversized? No, everyone gets lazy and they say we're just gonna throw one shit cover on there. Not Comics Drive, not Oxymoron, not Tyler James.
You know what? And we were we went to lunch with Comic Canuck, me and Brett. We actually work close by him, and from his website. And we're going to give him a copy actually of Scam tomorrow for him to read and review on his website. And so hopefully he'll get in touch with you, maybe talk to you and get you on his site as well, because he does really good work as well. But
awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I mean, it's basically we're spreading the word, but we were there with him and we were showing him on my phone. I was just on the website and I was just showing him some of those variants for the Oxymoron. And he was certainly surprised with the quality of it. And that's the thing. Some of those variants, they're so goddamn cool. I mean, what are you thinking? You getting these? I mean, did you have these prepared before the project, or are these coming in as the Kickstarter is going on and you're sitting there going, that's so cool, that's great, hopefully we can use that, or how'd that kind of work?
So that was, I mean, that was one of the cool things about Kickstarter, is that it's a month long. Yeah, it's like I've likened it to like a month long convention experience. And anybody that has ever done a convention with knows that, like, I always pull, you know, certain things aren't working, certain things don't go. So you call audibles, you make some changes, you put together different packages of merchandise, you do different things and see if it works. And so the Kickstarter is really like an online, you know, 30-day con experience where you're able to, you know, present the books, but also different packages and different premium merchandise and different unique things. So at the numbers we were looking to print at, adding variants didn't massively spike the cost of the total job. So now I did go a little probably overboard. 5 variants would have been fine, I think, but there was just something about hitting that magic number of 10 that I thought was good, and when I saw that was a possibility, I reached out to all of the artists that were on the team and just said, hey, you know, any of you guys want to draw your own variant for this book? And you know, not surprisingly, most of them jumped at the chance.
Yeah, and then some of these are, like I say, some of these are really, really cool. Joe, which one besides yours is your favorite?
You know what? Honestly, and I think I said this to Tyler, I think I want every one, because for the people who haven't checked it out that are listening, you got to go to can you still go to the Kickstarter page and check out the variants, or is that just something?
No, I'm on there right now, so yeah, you can.
Yeah. No, okay, so it is.
Honestly, that's one of the things about Kickstarter is once you do a project and once it closes, it's there for life. It's archived because they're all about transparency.
Yeah, well, if you could go to Kickstarter and then Oxymoron hashtag 2012, seriously, the covers are amazing. I mean, just the ingenuity – is that the word I'm looking for, ingenuity? The inventiveness of a lot of the covers. The Clockwork Orange cover. It's great. And I mean, like, you know, every artist killed it. There wasn't one that you'd be – if anything, you know, you get those people who are, you know, the people who really want to be collectors, and they get all these different variant covers. Well, I would have – almost every one of these. I wouldn't buy my own just because I hate myself, but I would buy everyone else's. And I don't think there's a bad cover amongst them. You've got stellar work on every one of them. You got the spot UV coating, and not to mention you have, you know, people haven't really even seen what's inside for the most part yet, which is the most exciting part.
Now the one, yeah, no kidding. Now one of the, my favorite one though is one that's kind of the old school 60s style, you know, Marvel, looks like an old school Marvel comic. You know which one I'm talking about there? I think that might have been the first one you put out.
Yeah, yeah, that was the, we call it the Golden Age variant by Rafer Roberts. And this was actually, Rafer was a little hesitant to jump on this project because he's never really done superhero stuff. I mean, his style is a little bit more sort of indie. I don't exactly know what to call it, but he's definitely got his own unique style. Check it out at Plastic Farm. But he, I had seen some work that he did in sort of that faux Golden Age style, and I'm just like, you know what? Like, one of the things that was cool about just reaching out to a whole bunch of different artists was that we're able to just see this character in, like, drawn a bunch of different ways. And in different styles. And so I sort of likened the story that he did to like an old oxymoron story that you'd find in your grandpa's basement or something. And really delivered. And that Golden Age cover really just seals it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Honestly, it's awesome. Now, Joe, yours has a certain perfect for oxymoron, has a certain sick sensibility to it. It's a lot of fun. How'd you come up with that one?
That's what I call the proctologist variant.
Yep.
Where you could see him, you know, putting on the glove. Of course, he's going to get you. But no, I just, you know what? I was just kind of once you start to draw the oxymoron, he is a character that you will want to draw a million times. Because the design of the character that Tyler and Caesar came up with is just phenomenal. Like, I can't tell you, while I'm working on Scam, while I'm working on commissions, while I'm working on anything, I will constantly, and even sometimes start my day just by doodling like an oxymoron. Like, I think the other day I did a thing with oxymoron hitting a golf club with Mitt Romney's head on the tee. You know, I don't know why. It's once you start... once you get yourself into the oxymoron mindset, it's just in there and it just eats away at you. And he's just such a cool character and a fun character. Like, you know, I think I had done in the book, I did more of like a cartoony version. And then I started to do like a sicker version. So, you know, I mean, there's just so many different ways to do it. So I just started fooling around with it. And then I sent this off to Tyler and I was like, as a thumbnail, I was like, hey, what do you think about this? And he was like, yep, do it. That's a cover. So that's so short.
Yep. And I actually colored that cover for Joe. So I brought it the rest of the way home just because I was being cheap and I didn't want to pay for another color.
No, you did a nice job. You did. Is that the only one that you did? Is that the only one you did?
I colored the Caesar cover as well.
Okay.
And just for those folks that are coming out to the New York Comic Con, I did a variation on the cover that Joe drew, and that will be the New York Comic Con oxymoron soft cover variant.
Nice.
That's just a very short run exclusive for New York Comic Con in a couple weeks.
All right. So, what are you guys' big plans then for New York Comic Con? Since you brought that up here, let's move on to that.
Well, if I could start off Thursday, which is, I know for 4-day passes, people have it, but Thursday is probably one of the biggest events that's going to happen in the state of New York, aside from any sort of Democratic primaries or anything like that would happen. It is the drink and draw at the end of the show, after the New York Comic Con, at the Tempest Bar and Grill. Right on 8th Avenue, right by Madison Square Garden, and that is the Imbibe with the Tribe event.
Oh, shit. And I'm not going to be there.
You need to – we'll Skype you in. Don't worry. But we you need kind of like an opening ceremony to the Olympics. You need to start off the New York Comic Con in a proper, gentlemanly way, and what better a way than to go down to the Tempest with Comics Tribe, drink, draw – have some other ruckusy things happen, and start that Friday at the con with already a bunch of stories from what disastrous things happened on Thursday.
Well, you're going to be there, Joe, so I presume strippers will be too. I mean, I know it's not a strip bar, but they just show up when you're around drinking, right?
I'm just going to say this. On a thirsty Thursday, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. That's awesome. So who all is going to be there at that event with you guys from Comics Tribe?
We got a great turnout. It's actually probably the biggest convention turnout for the tribe yet. So Joe and I will be holding shit down in the Comics Tribe booth in the small press area, and we'll be joined by the Selling Scotsman John Lees, who's coming all the way from Glasgow across the pond.
Whoa, I mean, and, I have heard he's a bit of a whore. Just not in a bad way.
No, never.
Let's be honest about that. If the Mojo show stands for anything, it stands for whoring.
Pretty much. Well, you know, I mean, again, and the mom joke's too easy to make, so I'll wait till it's a little bit harder to get to.
There's a mom joke in that too, but let's just continue.
So John will be there, and actually the entire the standard creative team, Jonathan Rector is coming in from Canada. So that'll be the first time that the standard team has met in person, which will be cool. Yeah. Nice little reunion for these guys who've been working together for 2.5 years.
And they've never met.
So those guys will be there all 4 days. And then Cesar Feliciano, of the Red 10, will be there on Saturday and Sunday.
How's Cesar doing?
He's doing good. I saw him actually 2 days ago at a convention in Connecticut. And, you know, while the convention wasn't terribly well attended, we had a good time.
You know, what was it? Last talked to him in January, so.
Yeah, he's been hard at work. He's got a he actually does the epilogue with me in the Oxymoron short, and some of the nicest work he's done yet. So yeah, he did a strong job on that, and he's hard at work on the Red 10 series right now. Yeah, so
the Red 10, how many issues in is that now? Is he penciled in? I know you did bring on, didn't you bring on a inker for the second issue as well?
Yep. Yep, Vic Moya is on as anchor, and Gus Ucha is the colorist. And actually, for the as we spoke, we put the pause button on the Red 10 from a release standpoint because of moving to Diamond, and it was sort of important for us to learn the ropes with Scan number one first, and just go through that process before trying to launch multiple series at once through the direct market. So the Red 10 number one is actually going to be in October's previews. We just had great news that it was made a preview staff pick. So like one of like three or four books in the whole month, in the whole catalog, made a staff pick, which, you know, hopefully we'll do something for it.
That's cool. That's cool.
And we've actually like completely remastered that issue. Gus Ucha, who's going to be coloring the entire series, but wasn't the colorist on the first issue, recolored the entire thing. Took another pass through the script. Cesar had a couple panels he wasn't liking. He redid and touched up and everything. So, So it's sort of a remastered introduction to the series that will be solicited in October and released in December.
All right, I got about 4 or 5 questions coming off of that, but why don't you finish up telling us who else is, anybody else who's going to be there at the drinking? What was it called again? What was it, Joe? The drinking, drink with Joe? No, get your.
That's not what it's called. Imbibe with the tribe.
There you go.
Thursday night's drink and draw. That's all you need to know. And also, I just want to say to the people who want to check out the Red 10, we have a nice little tie-in. In October Scam number 2, you will have a preview of the Red 10 number 1 right in the back. So I have absolute confidence in saying that I think the Red 10 is the strongest book that we put out at Comics Tribe. And I think it's just, you know, from soup to nuts, I think it's just the complete package, and it shows really how good, you know, an up-and-coming company Comic Tribe is. So anyone who wants to wet their whistle with comic greatness should definitely check out Scam number 2 for the free preview, and then also get it when it comes out in December.
Well, you know what, and the thing is, we say for this show's about whoring, but I mean, I'm honestly, God, you guys do quality books. Like, it's no bullshit. I liked Red 10 number 1. I thought Red 10 number 2 was even better. Like, I mean, just very excited to see where it goes. But the same thing as Standard. I mean, you say it's the strongest book. I don't know if I can pick a strongest book. I think, you know, a Standard also is excellent. A Scam, obviously, I'm a fan of. I'm even a fan of Epic, but I haven't seen too much of that. I'm hoping some more of that will come down the road.
Yeah, me too. No,
just me too. I don't mean it to put down other books.
No, I know, I know.
Like, you know, like to me, like it's just it's such a great idea. It's such a great premise. It's such a great team, written, drawn. The production work, it's just a great, great book. Don't get me wrong. Scam is the greatest book in the history of the world. And that's from Stan Lee. That's not from me. That's from Stan Lee, okay? Stan Lee, who is my accountant, said that it was the best book in the history of the world. So take that for what it is.
Yeah.
No, the Red 10 to me is just everything that's good about a superhero book that doesn't have the constraints of the big two.
You know what? I mean, it is true, though, because, I mean, Brett and I were talking about this today, actually. Brett, of course, co-host of We Talk Comics here on the We Talk Podcast Network, as I trip up my own words and my own whoring plug thing, so I'm not as good as you guys. But basically, we were talking about this today, how difficult it is to come up with a fresh concept. And, I mean, even then, once you come up with it, then you can't screw it up. Then you actually have to have the good quality story, the good quality art, the good quality, the right pacing, the right dialogue. But even just coming up with a concept like the Red 10 is incredibly difficult to do. So, I mean, it's a great idea. If people aren't familiar with it, Tyler, just Cole's note version, just tell people basically what the idea is.
So the Red 10 is a superhero retelling of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. To folks that have never read that, famed whodunit, I basically say it's how I would kill the Justice League if DC was crazy enough to let me. And it's a 10-issue murder mystery. Each issue, one quote-unquote hero in a super team is eliminated because of a lot of that ties to dark secrets that each one of them holds, and one of them is likely behind it all. So that's sort of the Red 10 in a nutshell. And you know, we're excited to keep that going. It's obviously we want to get that series out and get it in the hands of as many people as possible. And one of the things that I'm working on right now, which you know I don't necessarily want to announce it as a done deal because there still is an application process with the whole thing. But I'm in the working process of putting together the application to make the Red 10 Zero Comics Tribe's 2013 free comic book day book.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
And so that book will sort of. I'm working with talent on that, and that will be done in sort of a jam style and have 10 creators on it as well. So and then my goal is to get, you know, all 10 of those guys out into comic shops for signings all across North America to help promote the book on Free Comic Book Day. But, you know, so these are things that's in the works right now. People are drawing, people are working on that book. We'll also use that as an opportunity to promote the Oxymoron to the direct market, the Oxymoron hardcover, and hopefully get more eyeballs on the series and fill in a little bit of flesh out a little bit of the characters, the backstory, and hint at where it's going. So that's something that's in the works right now.
So why is it? I have to ask. Epic, like I say, which again, basically a kind of a superhero story. The twist is that the character, I guess, can't sustain his powers when around women he's attracted to. Is that?
Yeah, that's the Epic premise. Epic is about a teenage boy who gets incredible superpowers and realizes his only weakness is girls he's attracted to. So hot chicks literally are his kryptonite.
That's an awesome idea. And is it just kind of because your focus is on the so many other things that's not going forward? I mean, it was an ash can? Was that what basically came out so far? I mean, was it distributed through micro distribution or?
Actually, we never even took Epic to the micro distribution route. It wasn't quite ready for that. So that up until now has been a convention only book. And it's a book that I've co-created with a talented artist named Matt Zollman. And, you know, it's a book that is continued to be worked on, but it's just the production has probably gone slower than Matt and I would like. And with everything else that's going on with Comics Tribe, you know, we're sort of, I'm cognizant about how to unveil these things, these books, and that there's only so much bandwidth we can have. I see a lot of small press publishers. It's like, you know, they put out a book and that book doesn't sell. So the first thing they do is put out another book.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's necessarily a winning strategy. And I think what we're really trying to do is keep the line focused, try to maintain a certain sense of quality. And I think we've got some really good editorial people. Stephen Forbes as editor in chief, and then we've got a senior editor named Steve Colley who's come on. He's helping with editing the Red 10 and Scam, and I think they're you know, just helping keep that quality up. And hopefully, you know, my goal is that the success of Scam will help have the Red 10 launch a little bit bigger, and hopefully the Red 10 will help the Standard get its proper release worldwide in 2013, and that'll be even bigger than everything else. And then, you know, and then we'll deliver on these series, get some earn some fans, and then when Joe and I come back with something new, or we launch a new series with some additional talent that we've been working behind the scenes with, then we just keep building on these things.
I mean, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
Yeah, well, you know what it is? It's a marathon, but it also has a lot of sprinting in it too. yeah, as every time it comes to crunch time to get to print, we'll attest. You know, it's me and Joe yelling at each other, and
Joe doesn't yell.
Yeah,
it's more of a slur. It's more of a drunken slur. I mean, you know. I need to stay out of the boob parlors, and I need to keep myself at the table. And Tyler's right. That's it. I'll say it.
End of the day, Tyler's always right.
Not all the time. I've definitely made my share of mistakes here and there. But one quick thing, I do want to before we get away from the New York Comic Con excitement. I do want to also just mention that a number of Oxymoron contributors will be at our booth as well. It's booth 2380 in Small Press. And so at the Comics Tribe booth throughout the weekend and tomorrow on comicstribe.com, I'm actually posting the schedule. But you'll be able to see folks like Paul Allure, who's just
tomorrow. By the time I have this edited together, about 2 days from now, probably, it will be up. Let's put it that way.
There you go. yeah, so we have Paul Allure, who did the Clockwork Anthology, just had a very well-received Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one-shot by IDW that he put out, and has another new book that he just named Orc Girl, which looks amazing, that he's putting out. So this guy's, he's definitely blowing up. Rich Duick, who worked with Rafer Roberts on his Oxymoron show, will be there. Mark Poulton of Avengeline and formerly of Savage Hawkman. Jason Cherimella, of the Cape, Alex Cormick, and then Rafer Roberts with the Golden Age variant. All those guys will be putting in a stint signing at the Comic Tribe booth at New York Comic Con.
Cool.
So,
cool.
Yeah, we're gonna have a busy, fun.
Oh, sounds like you don't even need Joe there.
Listen to me. You will have no better time at any table or at anything than you will at the Comics Tribe.
Right, that's it. Nick, you guys are going to be at the New York Comic Con again next year, right? Is that one I think I can swing?
Well, look, of course we'll be there next year. It's not even a question.
All right.
Don't worry.
Any chance you're coming to my neck of the woods next year? Keith has already said he'll let you stay at his house.
No, he didn't say that, but
I just said that for him.
The dirt hole in the basement, and he lowers down the lotion. I've stayed in Keith's place plenty of times. But... I really do hope to, man. I've heard nothing but – you're talking about the Calgary one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Calgary convention, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great things about it. So, you know, as long as –
it was huge this last year. And, of course, as we mentioned last time you guys were on, the Calgary is probably a much bigger city than you guys realized, so –
No, again, I was a big fan of Bret Hart as a kid growing up, so I watched all the documentaries, all that stuff. Yeah. So I did see it was very big. But, no, I would like to go. I really would. I've heard nothing but great things about that show.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. And, okay, all right, that way we'll see each other twice next year. That would be the plan then.
Don't push it.
Yeah,
don't.
You're right. Sorry, let's get on to just because we're talking about this, we're kind of going through these books. There's one other book that you guys gave me a preview for, and this was kind of several months ago back – I mean, basically how we got into this whole thing, where this whole thing evolved from, was We Talk Comics decided to do an Independence Month and highlighting the small press. And we're always a big fan of that, and an entire month of it. And that's kind of where we got some of your previews originally. You heard that we were doing that. And hopefully we're planning to turn that into some sort of annual plan. I'm not sure if it'll be just a show or an entire month again. But, you know, kind of a – we want to revisit that. But anyways, that's what we got. Kind of got your original work. One of the books that you gave us early on there, Tyler, was Runners, which was the book that two of the guys were kind of cool on. I really enjoyed, and one guy didn't like at all.
Yep.
Kind of a little bit more – a little bit of a different, because we generally, you know, we're sitting here, we're kind of generally gushing over the books from Comics Tribe, and I'm wondering, is that a book that still you're planning to go with in the future? Or is this, what's kind of the fate of Runners within Comics Tribe?
So I think Runners, there's still scripts for it. It's still it's a back burner project, and I think when we do relaunch that one, it will be probably as a webcomic. I think it's an interesting market right now, and I think smart publishers that are on our level or either trying to get or a little ahead of us or a little behind us or wherever, you need to take an all-of-the-above strategy. You don't want to completely ignore the direct market because that, you know, that's where so many comic fans, you know, live and breathe and interact and things count there. At the same time, you know, the audience that you can, there's no faster, cheaper, easier way to get your work read than by putting it directly on the web for free and hoping to monetize some other way. And Kickstarter is creating a new model as well, with the crowdfunding model. So I think an all of the above approach is a good one. And so I think there are going to be some titles that Comics Tribe work on that we think may have just a tougher time penetrating the direct market, or going through Diamond or hitting those order minimums and getting retailer buy-in, but are still stories worth telling. If Runners comes back, I think it'll be something that is webcomic first and then followed up with trade collections and stuff.
Now, you also have – I know you probably – you worked as the editor on that one, didn't you?
Did I get a credit? I know I gave Steven a fair amount of red ink. You know, Steven's the head honcho of an editor-in-chief of Comics Tribe, and he definitely tears my scripts new ones. So I think I had the opportunity to mark up his script, and I definitely jumped at that one.
Well, okay. The only reason I'm asking is just because, like I said, I enjoyed it, and you know, it was more of a mixed review though, and yep. I think the concept though there is something really 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 strong. So I'm hoping to see more of it. And you know, a little bit tweaked maybe here and there, and a little bit more polish put into it, I suppose, just with time and energy and money and experience and all these things, you know. And I hope to see some more Runners.
I'm glad you hear that, and I'm glad to hear that you dig it, and Steven will be glad too. And I agree. I mean, that thing, like at conventions, the simple pitch that I tell people is, you know, when the zombie apocalypse hits, what the fuck do vampires eat? And that, you know, that gets them to stand up and take a little notice. So
no, it is. It's a great idea. It really is. There's something there. So you know. But speaking of great ideas, see how I transitioned that there?
You're a pro.
Professional over here, goddammit. Let's move on to just another thing that was just about to launch that Joe had kind of filled me in on what was going to happen before it happened, but told me not to tell anybody, and we didn't. And it did happen. Of course, you guys had scamped come through previews, and you guys had a billboard, Las Vegas. And I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that whole experience of Scam actually coming out through previews. And, you know, I mean, obviously it I can't imagine there was a prouder moment the day that it actually came out through previews and shipped to those stores for both of you guys. But also the billboard and kind of how the reception of that kind of – Joe, go through it a little bit for me.
I will just say this. If you don't want to carry around – several hundred business cards from convention to convention, just put up one billboard. It works just as good. It works just as good. Because now, you know, people like will see you and be like, are you the fucking crazy guy who threw up a billboard? And you're like, yeah, I am. I just actually got back last week. I went and saw it in person, and it was awesome. It was everything you'd think it would be. How many times do you get your stuff put on a billboard? You know what I mean?
Did you take a picture?
Oh, of course. I took several. I tried to climb up the pole, but I couldn't.
I'm going to have to get you to email me or put it on Twitter or whatever again for me or something like that just to – I'm going to put that up as this show's picture then.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. What are your pictures
you took?
I went down with some friends, and we took so many photos, and then – we went back one night drunk. We took more photos. It was a good time. You know what I mean? Like we, you know, like I said.
You didn't have to tell me you went back drunk. We already assumed you were there drunk.
You're right. Assumed.
Yeah.
What had happened was the funniest thing was when you would get in the cab and you would tell the cab driver where you're going, and then you wouldn't say like a hotel. You just said take me to the billboard, to which I guess they don't normally hear. And then, you know, as we got there, we would tell the cab driver, oh, yeah, you know, I got a billboard up of my book and, you know, you should check it out and all this kind of stuff. And every single person that we were in the car with, and it was three different cab drivers, they were all like they had no idea what comic books were. They're like, oh, what do you mean? Like, is it? And, you know, we had to give them like a quick little tutorial of what comics actually are nowadays. And every single one of them were like, oh, that's awesome. That's great. That's cool. So from an experience overall, it's been a blast having that thing up. It's definitely been a good entrance into the mainstream comic world of like pounding our chest and saying we're here. You know, it was a nice little start to the whole diamond distribution deal for Comics Drive.
So you would classify it as an utter success?
Well, it, as long as it didn't fall down, it was a success. So yes, I would classify it as a full-on success.
Awesome, Tyler. What about you for the billboard? What are your thoughts now that it's all coming and gone? I guess. Well, it hasn't gone, I guess, but it's out there and kind of the feedback.
Honestly, I think it's something that you're going to talk to us a year from now, and we'll either if scam number five is out and Joe and I haven't you know completely just jumped off a bridge and we've been able to you know do the something that's very hard is to release a brand new creator owned full series from a new publisher. If we're able to do that, I would say it's a resounding success. It was a part of it, but I don't think there's always a you know X plus Y equals Z. I think there's so many different things that factor into it, the success of a book, into order numbers, into certain things that and I think it's cumulative. So the jury's still out on how effective it is and how many new readers that a billboard is going to bring in. I know that anecdotally we got a lot of reports of people coming into the shops in Vegas saying they'd seen the billboard and wanted to find out what the scam was about. And I know I'm pretty sure Scam Number One was one of the top selling books for Maximum Comics, at least in the past 6 to 8 weeks. So, I think it's it was a bold move for sure.
Oh yeah.
But at the very least, you know, it helped us come out the gate pretty hot. And we'll see how it plays out.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I always do. But the greater point is that, my enthusiasm to put out Scam is one thing. My enthusiasm to put out Scam with Tyler and Comics Tribe is another thing. And, you know, I don't think we would have partnered to do it if it wasn't this is a legit company. I understand comics and retailers have this threat of these independent people who come out, they throw out an issue, they know it's hard work, and they kind of falter and they don't do anything. We're the opposite. We're driven. We have a long-term plan, and we need the support of every single person. So if, you know, every comic fan sees that and says, wow, that's some crazy shit, you know, that's awesome that these guys are this excited about it. And if no one who's ever, you know, if anyone who doesn't know comics looks at it and it makes them take a second look or think about comics in a different way, it's all worthwhile, you know. And at the end of the day, it's our attempt at saying, in a little way, we're a Comics Tribe, we're here, we're making quality books, you know, minus me jumping out of a blimp, and skydiving for the Super Bowl, which might be a Scam Number Five promotional tool. I'm not going to say no to it.
We just want to come out for trade.
Yeah, and I just want to come out there and be like, I am fucking proud as hell of Scam. I'm proud as hell to be working with Comics Tribe, and I'm proud as hell to be working in the comics medium, and people need to recognize all three.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? I was just going to give the shout out, like I say, Comic Canuck. His website that he has is
Comic Book Therapy.
And like I say, I'm hoping that he will talk to you guys, and because there's people that don't go to We Talk Podcast. Amazing as that is, but I'm hoping he will talk to you guys further and after he reads the book, because and that's another thing. We want to thank you guys for on behalf of We Talk Comics, We Talk Podcasts, and Brett himself, you guys had on Scam a pull quote from him you put on the back, and he was really happy about that, and thank you for including that.
You're absolutely welcome. I hold the thank yous until you read the back of the second issue. That's all I could say, because we had a little fun. So.
Yeah, Joe listened to a podcast review, and they were mostly positive on the book, and then spent about 3 minutes complaining about the back cover quotes that we used.
Oh, really?
And so we had some fun with them on issue two.
All right, well, that sounds good. I can't wait.
We also quoted Morning Glory's artist Joe Eisma, who has gone on record as calling Joe Mulvey the most dangerous man in comics, which is a moniker I want to stick.
Actually, that's a great. I've been calling him the king of the con, but you're probably the most dangerous man in comics is even better.
Now that's it. Now I got to start a fight at New York Comic Con with somebody. I don't know who, but someone's going down.
I say Stan Lee. I think you could take him.
I'll leg sweep that fuck.
Sweep the leg, Johnny. No.
You know what? We were just at Baltimore Con, and a lot of people there was all these different passes to see Stan Lee. And for some reason, I was like, I don't really, I appreciate everything he's done, and I'm a fan, but I'm like, I don't really got to go meet him. And then all of a sudden, he walked past us with his security, and it was like the Pope walked by. All of a sudden, you're just like, oh my God, Stan Lee. Now I'm like, all right, maybe I do have to go meet him.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of the day, he's still Stan the man.
No, but at the end, he turned around and he says, are you that dumb fuck that put up the billboard? I said, yes, Mr. Lee. And he said, Excelsior. And I said, thank you. And then I thought he was doing like a spider web thing, but he was just giving me a middle finger with arthritic hands. It was really – it was something. He made my Baltimore.
I don't know where to actually go from that.
That's what happens when you have the most dangerous man from comics on.
Holy shit.
Pow!
Yeah, exactly. Pow. Oh, wow. All right, what else you guys want to get into?
Suck on this, true believer.
Got your no prize right here.
It's awesome.
Shit.
Talk to Mo. You're the guiding light of this entire thing.
Oh, I know. I don't know how to top that. All right, we're not going to even try. Anything else you guys want to mention about Comics Tribe and Red 10, Scam, Diamond, anything else coming out? Or we want to move on to talking maybe about some other comic book-related items?
Yeah, no, we've showed us for ourselves enough. What are the hot button topics of the day here?
Well, the big one is Kirkman and Moore settling their Walking Dead lawsuit, which I found out from you guys right before the podcast. Full disclosure. Anyways, what do you guys think of that that topic? Go ahead, Joe.
You know what? I think it's. I don't know the situation that well, unfortunately, but am I correct in thinking that Tony Moore just walked away from The Walking Dead, or was that not?
That was my understanding as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just give a quick answer based on that. And again, an uninformed answer is probably not the best thing. Mitt Romney has shown that many times.
Yeah,
over
no kidding,
so far.
Huh?
But I think, but you know,
I do I understand that Moore was told that by Kirkman that the television deal wouldn't happen. At least he claims the television deal wouldn't happen unless he signed over all the rights to Kirkman to negotiate. So that was what he was told, that they weren't interested in negotiating with two people for this television series.
So, I mean, didn't he get bought out originally? See, like, that's what I'm saying. I don't know the situation. I mean, to me, if you walk away from a property and then something happens with it, you kind of can't come running back and saying, you know, you can't come back and, like, now all of a sudden it's a success and try to piggyback on it.
Well, think about,
you know, at the same time, I don't know their original creator-owned, you know, contract with each other.
Well, the thing about it is that he's still being able to make a good living off of that, right? I mean, obviously, I mean, at conventions and such, but we're still talking about quite a bit of money. The book has been a quality book without him. Nobody's really complained about him not being there. I mean, I'm not really sure what to take off of it either. But what do you think, Tyler?
Well, I mean, for all the talk of this year being the year of the creator owned, I think it does reinforce that. You know, once you throw a shit ton of money into any situation, if there's not clear contracts and all that, and in some cases, even if there are clear contracts, things can get pretty pretty litigious. And it's not just Marvel and DC that have the lawyers and have the potential for disputes to go awry and sort of give a black mark to things. You know, it's I think a lot of it has to do with stuff that is often done, or the challenge is, you know, these guys were friends growing up, I think, and
yeah,
known each other forever, and I imagine at least early on there wasn't a lot done as far as official contract or whatnot. You know, so much of the comic world is done on a handshake and there's a lot of trust, and you know, it's scary and a shame to see when that is, you know, abused potentially.
As a publisher, go ahead Joe.
No one wants there to be a scam, but like my question is, and I'm kind of hijacking this question for a second, why do you think it is, like, we're seeing, like, The Walking Dead is, I mean, it's the A++ example of a creator-owned comic going somewhere. The sales of the book are fantastic. Number 100 is the number one selling book regardless of all the variants and that stuff, the number one selling book. It beats Big Two. It has a successful TV show. I mean, it is the penultimate independent comic that you could have asked for, definitely a present day. My question is, why do you think it is that there's so many people now going to creator-owned? You have Ed Brubaker working away from his Marvel duties to do more creator-owned. Same with Matt Fraction. You have Sean Gordon Murphy. Is that right? Sean Gordon, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you have him stepping away saying, I want to do creator-owned stuff. You have, you know, Grant Morrison stepping away saying, I want to do creator-owned stuff. There's got to be something in the air where these creators realize that there is something to it. Now, I don't know if Tony Moore had that same thing, and it was much – it's always risky no matter what. I don't think it should ever be said it's not a risk, because you dictating what you think a fan base will react to is one thing. But, you know, all these people coming out of the gate, you know, Saga. You say what you want about BKV. He does have a loyal fan base, but that book is stellar. And he – definitely be writing, you know, some book for Marvel or DC, but he doesn't want to. Like, there's got to be something in the water.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. It's money. I mean, and I was talking to a bunch of creators and guys that have, you know, that've been doing it for a while and working and have worked for Big Two and stuff, and that the recent Gail Simone Kickstarter where she raised $100,000 plus for her new sort of mini trade or whatever what she's putting out with Jim Calafiore, that got a lot of people who maybe have sort of missed the Kickstarter just phenomenon that's coming up to take note. And I think with the sales numbers that Image Books are doing, with media deals and Hollywood interest, and with the ability to go directly to the fan base that you've sort of built on the backs of the Big Two for a lot of mainstream creators, it just makes absolute sense to take in and start creating some IP of your own.
Grant Morrison did say that one of the reasons he was stepping away was because you can't please the fans with those big properties. You're always going to have somebody bitching about you, and they get very personal, and he didn't like that. And being able to step away and doing his own project where there isn't necessarily those expectations was one of the things that appealed to him. And I do think, though, you're right, though. I mean, the fact is that media and, movie properties and these type of things, they're not going away from looking to comic books anytime soon. There's a lot of opportunities out there, but it's also cyclical. I mean, we saw this 20 years ago with Image, and, you know, we'll see it again. We saw it with Neil Adams and his group, you know, kind of breaking away at some point, I believe, in the 70s. And it is kind of a cyclical thing, I think, that every now and then that it's kind of something that creators will do and then, you know, go through their process as a creator independently and then end up back with the Big Two and then kind of go away again. I mean, we've seen it a few times now, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, you make your bones in the independent world. You go to Marvel and DC, and you know, as you see your Ruckas and your Brubakers and your Morrisons exit the Big Two, now you're seeing guys like Sam Humphries and Nick Spencer and Hickman and Cullen Bunn, who did it and built a name for themselves with well-regarded independent titles. Now they're filling those roles. So, you know, the Spider-Man and Wolverine stories are going to keep rolling. Somebody's going to fill those.
Absolutely.
Blocks.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm just glad Morrison isn't going to ruin any more of the characters I enjoy. And since I'm not a fan of Matt Fraction, I'm glad of that too.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean,
what's that?
I said, boo on you, sir. Boo.
You're a fan of Fraction, are you?
Not particularly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean for your opinion. I meant as a person. Boo. Boo on you, sir.
As a person, I'm not much of a fan.
I will say this. I do like Grant Morrison. I do like his work.
Well, I mean, he's done some great work. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's to me, it's just exciting to see. To me, it's exciting to see people who like really, really get that the industry with the big two, to me, becomes stale. And I think the reboot by DC is a sign of that. I think the Marvel Now soft reboot is a sign of that. You know, like there's got to be a way to, you know, sell pajamas, sell toys, and also sell comics. And I think along the line somewhere they forgot that. And I think it's a good thing if all of a sudden you have these creators going somewhere, really letting their creative voices go and making properties that, you know, the big two wouldn't ever take a chance on. Because eventually, you know, and I'm saying this while I knock wood, eventually there's got to be growth with the medium. There's got to be growth to where people see that resting an entire industry on the idea of 10 people from 70 years ago might not be the, you know, the sturdiest way to do it. And when you let these guys go nuts, you know, and really, really create, hopefully they make characters that last the next, you know, 200 years. You know, so I don't know. That's my hope.
Yeah, I'm going to – let's get into this here a little bit then, based off of what you just said. Because I think you were right. And this is something you say pretty consistently on all the podcasts every time we talk to you. You talk about how the industry doesn't do enough to grow itself. And, Joe, you've mentioned that numerous times. I'm going to
– Yeah, I got to put it on my chest.
We have – when we were here in Calgary, we had – like you say, this convention was massive. I mean, it had the entire cast of Star Trek and, you know, I mean, 50,000 people – Star Trek TNG, I should say. And it's 50,000 people there over 3 days and, you know, a big deal. And one of the things that I was complaining about at the show was you had your comic book section off here on the one end, and you had, you know, some big creators. I mean, I think George Perez was probably the most popular creator this year. But there's a Arsidoikum was another one. I hope I said his name right, because it's not easy. I like names like Tyler James. That's a little bit more up my alley.
Sure.
Yeah. It's nice and simple.
You got it.
But
Stanley, I got it.
Stanley, that's a good one. I go by Mo, so you know that's there's a reason. But anyways, so you had your comic books over here, and you had your cosplay, you had your video games, you had your movie actors, you had your wrestlers, you had all these different things at the event. But it's still a comic book show, and the amount of effort put forth by DC and Marvel and even independent people at that show to reach the people who had gone there to see Stan Lee, to see even who were fans of Adam West but hadn't gone there to get comic books and weren't comic book readers but were interested in the other pop culture parts, the effort to get comic books into their hands and say, this is cool too, try this, was really pathetic. And it kind of pissed me off. I mean, there was no ash cans. There's just nothing. Like, they just kind of went, oh, they're here to get an autograph from, you know, somebody from Angel, from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They'd have no interest in coming and reading our comic book too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna tell you the greatest secret that everyone knows, so it's not the best secret. Selling comics is hard. It really is hard. And you know, another point where I'll get back on.
And you know what? Again. And I just I'll let you finish here. No, but I know it's hard. But theoretically, the people that show up in costumes or are going to Star Trek or at that convention should be easier to sell to than somebody walking down the street in a Eagles, you know, jersey. So.
Yeah, but let me tell you this. Also, a salesman is a salesman. And, you know, like, I have successes, I have failures, but I'll be damned if I'm not trying to sell the Comics Tribe books when I'm at that table and I am trying to sell the shit out of those books to people. And you have to have a concise pitch. You have to have a good demeanor. You have to have, you know, a little bit of a way about you that you can not frighten people and bring them in to at least listen to you. And, you know, it's not easy, but to me, I can understand where you're coming from, because I go to shows, we go to conventions, and we see people who are content to just pretty much sit back and not do anything and then, you know, expect the books to sell themselves, where you're not in that market. You're in the market where you're the salesman, you're the marketer, you're the everything. And, you know, I understand where it comes from. Comics are hard to sell, but not to those to those people that are there for a convention. And you know, you got to come up with some kind of line. You got to come up with something you can do to interact with those fans and get them to talk to you.
You know what? I know Tyler probably has something he wants to add in here. I'll let you in a second, but I just got to.
Tyler is a ninth level Jedi.
Well, I've noticed he's definitely a hell of a lot smarter than me. You both are, though.
Fucking jockstrap. The man's amazing.
Yeah, no. Like I say, I'm the dumbest guy in the room, but nevertheless, I'm going to throw my opinion out here. You know what? You're right, and I don't really blame the small press creators or even the big, even the bigger guys. Even a guy like Peter David, if he's not out there really pushing it, I mean, he doesn't have to, for instance, in that situation. Or even the small press guys who are kind of hoping people come by to them. I understand that. I mean, it is difficult, like you say, to sell comic books, even to comic book fans, because they only have so much money. My issue is largely, why the hell isn't Marvel and Image and DC there? Not so much necessarily to sell their product, but to advertise and make aware of their current product more to these fans. I mean, there was no DC banner for DC 52 with a – like if they just had something there – somebody who was a salesman there letting people know what their product is and who DC is and pushing it to those other people and walking that floor, if they certainly have the resources to do that and they certainly have the product and the brand recognition to do that, and they're still not doing that, and that's what really pisses me off.
Yeah, I feel like they could be more – they're the people who are like, the books will sell themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It won't
be the books that sell themselves. It'll be the retailers that sell their books for them.
Yeah, and that's bullshit.
You know, but you do have – because you do have – I mean, retailers in the local areas, like, they see these conventions as a big potential, you know, source. And I know that
– but I'm not saying that they should go there to sell their product. I'm saying they should go there to create brand awareness for the retailers in the area.
Yeah, it really seems like nowadays the Marvels and DCs of the world really cut their or focus their convention experience on only, you know, a very small number of shows. Your San Diego and New York, and I'm not sure if they go to any other shows.
Maybe Chicago, Toronto. Those are a couple of the other big ones, aren't they?
I mean, occasionally they'll send some representatives. They'll send your Tom Brevoort's or your Cebulski's to different ones. But as far as having the big Marvel set up with the giant Hulk statue, you know.
Well, honestly, they should have – I don't care if it's – they should just have people walking the floor with ash cans or I don't know, printouts of previews of different things. I don't know. Just walking the floor and giving it away for free and going to people. And if you want it, it's on the other side where those comic book retailers are selling it. It's great stuff and just pushing it. Because they just – right there, it's like there's a pool. How many times are you going to get 50,000 people who might try a comic book sitting there? And probably – I would say of the 50,000, 10,000 were actually comic book fans. So we're – say 20%. So you had another 80% that weren't really comic book regular readers but have potential, more potential than the person walking down the street. And they're not sitting there hustling ass to get it to their hands, because if they get it into those people's hands and those people like it and those people tell their friends and blah, 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 it all – it's hey, what is it? It's the butterfly effect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's word of mouth. But I think that – you know what? Unfortunately, I don't think you're going to see that. I like the idea where you're at, like saying, hey, let's grab these people. But I think – Their mentality is like, once they're in that door to the convention, we've got them. We're the two biggest companies. We've got, you know, we've got the most market share. We've got this and that. I really don't feel like they go in there trying to move that much product.
No, they don't.
You know, maybe they'll show you what toys are coming out. They'll show you what video game clips or movie clips they can show you. But the comics, like Tyler said, those guys are going to be the retailers that are in the retailer section, and those are the guys moving the product. Those companies are not there with stock looking to get rid of it.
Can I ask?
You know, don't get me wrong. They'll put up the writers and the artists that you want to come in as a loyal fan, come and check out and talk to and maybe get a little scoop on what's going to happen. But for the most part, those inundated people that are, you know, walking around there to see Adam West or Lou Ferrigno or the guy who played Face in the A-Team, when they go to see him, they're not there for comics, and I don't think they really care, which I agree with you is a lost market share that you could be, you know, expanding on. But I just
they may not care, but they're probably more open-minded than somebody at a base. If you went to a baseball stadium to try and get people, you know what I mean? Though you can do that too. What the hell?
But I mean, you know what? Let's expand it out. When you go to see the Avengers, it would have taken a second to, you know, a 5-second placement ad of the Comixology app.
Absolutely.
If people don't even want to go to a store, just download this app and get every comic we have. And they don't do that. So, you know, if they're not going to make a 10-second advertisement that could reach 500 billion people, I doubt they're going to, you know, send a girl around with an ash can of Spider-Man 700 trying to get people into comics.
Yeah, well.
Which is a sad.
That is a sad thing. And that does piss me off. And I did once ask a retailer how much of it is their responsibility to get people in the door, and how much of it do they feel is the company's? And they said 50-50, but they don't feel it's a 50-50 split that they're getting. You know, and I mean, yeah. and who knows, maybe retailers and you guys are publishers, you know, I mean, certainly a publisher and a creator. I mean, I don't know. For you guys, it's different because you're a small press. But I mean, for a big company, even like Marvel, maybe they think that it's on the other way, that it's not 50-50, that they're doing most of the work. Who knows? But it just doesn't seem like there's much synchronicity between the retailers always and the publishers, these big two. And let's face it, as much as I love the independents and the small press and the Image even, or the Dark Horse or the Valiant right now, I love Archer and Armstrong. That's awesome. The newest Archer and Armstrong. As much as I love that, this industry goes as Marvel and DC goes.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And I think to the extent that we've had retailers that have that we've built relationships with and that are sort of in our corner is to the extent that they see that we're actually out there doing stuff. We're, you know, engaging fans on social media. We're doing contests. Joe's putting up crazy billboards. You know, we're at least trying to meet them halfway and showing them, you know, how to sell our books and who our books are to be sold to and what the value propositions of them are. So, it's a very important thing and something that, you know, the big two can't really lose sight of.
All right. Well, okay. Anything else you guys want to talk about? A little bit about DC Zeroes. You guys been keeping up with any of that? Reading any of that?
I have. I've been reading a lot. I really like the Batman issue. That's not really any secret right there. I actually like Team 7 a lot.
Really?
The Justin Jordan team. Yeah, did you check it out?
Yeah, I did. I read it, and I kind of thought that, honestly, I thought it's a Magnificent Seven ripoff again. I've seen that. I've read that or seen that story a million times. I thought that I just don't like what they've done with the Amanda Waller character. I loved her before. They made her this hot chick who has this military background back when she was actually a bureaucrat who was a little heavy set and dangerous. To me, she's a much more standard character. They've ruined one of their most unique, interesting characters. So those things hurt it for me, but also just I really loved the early Image Team 7, and I thought that was a really interesting concept, how they tied in a lot of characters who were published through the different creators into that, whereas this is just kind of another standard team book to me, and it's just not as cool. And hell, no Deathblow, no, it's not as good for me.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is I'm not really that connected to the DC universe outside like Batman, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm reading a lot more because of the reboot, honestly, but there was, you know, I liked a lot of the Zero issues. I liked the Catwoman one, I liked the Batman one again that I said. The Justice League one was great with Shazam. And then that's it. I don't
you
know.
You like the Catwoman one. I didn't like the Catwoman one.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, it's not my favorite comic of all time, but I enjoyed it. It was a good, you know, good quick story. I mean, again,
what did
I'm
you
not,
think of the art in that? And to me, it's, I found it so.
I didn't like the art that much.
You did?
I'll be honest with you. No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't. I felt it was inconsistent.
Yeah.
But, It got the story across. And you know what? I think on a few of these Zero issues, they were trying to break in some new talent. So, because I saw a lot of names that weren't on the earlier issues, which is fine by me. But you know, it's I think it's going on again, right? It's still this week?
Yeah, still this week. Yeah, this week will be the last week of it. And then we're going to try and cover it all in one show, all 50, well, basically 52 books in one show, and we talk comics. We have a concept that we hope will be fun for listeners, but it's going to be a hell of a lot to go through.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah, I haven't actually read any of the Zero issues. The only bit I've seen was what Scott Snyder was showing me at you know, at the Hyatt bar.
You name dropper, you. Anyways, tell the story.
Yeah. No, not much of a story. Just it's, you know, the bar's closing, and Snyder's had a couple, and he's so thrilled with the way the Zero issue came out. He's like showing anybody that would look at it. He's like, and this is my favorite part.
That's pretty funny. You know what?
I gotta say, he really is a very genuinely enthusiastic creator, which is awesome.
That's awesome. Just to hear that somebody actually gives a shit that much about their own work, like, that's, you know. That's cool. That's super cool.
Yeah, definitely a genuine dude.
It's just like an infectious joy and energy while he was showing
Did
the
he
book.
Know who you I guys mean, were in kind of your books or Comics Try It All?
No, that was in they were all in the toilet. So I don't know what happened with them there. But,
actually, John Lees met him when he was over at Kapow, and he put a couple of copies of The Standard in his hand.
Nice.
And he's been sort of having back and forth. We're hoping to get a pull quote for him.
That'd be great, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I was hoping to break some news. Always leaving and coming to you guys exclusively.
Look, we can't tell you what happens at the Hyatt Bar stays at the Hyatt Bar.
He decided to imbibe with the tribe at the Hyatt Bar.
I don't even think he knew it.
He was kidnapped.
Yeah.
How about the Marvel reboot? Any thoughts as we head towards that?
You know what? I was disgusted by it. I mean, does anyone not know how this is going to end? Does anyone not know how AVX is gonna finish off?
No. I think we've known since issue 3.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Throw me a curveball. I'd love it. I don't think Jean's coming back. I think that's going to be Hope. I think she takes over the Phoenix Force. I think she uses it for good or whatever it is. But I don't know. Like, I think, and I've said this publicly on Twitter, I think my own hope for what the series is going to be, especially with so much talent on the book, that I thought they were going to, you know, give you something that looked like the same old, and then kind of switch it up. And I haven't gotten that so far, but, you know, I'll take a good little swerve at the end, and I'll be happy with it if it happens. But if not, I'll be honest with you, the talent they're putting on all those books, I'll definitely be checking out number ones.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, for all the shit I say about gimme new, you know, they're throwing havoc on the Avengers team, and I'm fucking buying number one, so they got me.
Nice. How about you, Tyler? Any thoughts as we near this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll check out some of them. I'll check out the Remender flagship book. It's always interesting to see sort of a, you know, someone that's been doing the damn thing and working hard as Rick's done, and sort of working his way up the Marvel ladder, get what, you know, looks like it might be the flagship book. So I'll definitely check that one out. And, you know, well, I'll look at what's interesting. It's the shuffling of the teams and the big two. Like, I because of what I'm so focused on doing and trying to do well is in the independent space. You know, most of the stuff that I'm picking up and studying is you know, new creator-owned stuff. So I'm more curious and interested in seeing, like, Bedlam from I think that's Spencer and Riley Rossimo and Non-Humans from Portasio and you know, books like that that stuff interests me is more so than, you know, the how many reboots is it for Avengers or X-Men in the past?
I couldn't tell you.
5 years. It's just
it's a little much, isn't it?
It's too much.
That's why I don't have the enthusiasm for it. I mean, I agree. There's going to be some talent on some of those books early on, and And for that reason, you know, I mean, curiosity, you'll get some buys, but I basically look at it the same way. Like, how excited can I be for something that they say is going to be a big deal, and I feel like they've done before and they're going to be doing again shortly after.
Yeah, you know what, though? I will say this. For all the big books that they push, especially, you know, we've already talked about DC, so I'll go to the Marvel side. Marvel is putting out some really good books. Like, I really like the new Gambit series. I really like the new Hawkeye series.
I like Hawkeye, too, and that's Fraction. I got to give it that.
Yeah, no, but they're doing some stuff there. It's just that, you know, I guess they don't put the PR machine behind that. They do, you know, Cyclops is going to fight a Firebird or something. You know what I mean? Like, I get the push of it. And by the way, I did say on the show that if the Iron Fist becomes a Phoenix Force, I will get an Iron Fist Phoenix Force tattoo on my wang. So yeah, we have one more issue to go.
We're holding you to it.
Absolutely. Not even a question.
Yeah, I'm planning to get actually a wang tattooed on my wang, just so it looks bigger.
Let me tell you something. You will do huge in China. They will love you. But really, like, my next thing is I can't stop picking up all the new crop of Image books.
Yeah, Image is and I said this before, it's the new Vertigo. I mean, it's just quality, consistent quality.
I want the next revival. I want the next Manhattan Projects. I want the next, what is that other Hickman book that I love? Sweet? Is it? Oh, Secret. Secret. I want that. Like, you know, Morning Glories, all of it. It's just such – I really think it's the strongest publisher right now.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely agree with that. Absolutely. It's the second strongest publisher behind Comics Drive right now. I agree.
That is true. That is true.
I think we still got a ways to work up that ladder, but,
slowly but surely.
The next Luther Strode is probably the biggest book I'm most looking forward to by the end of the year.
How many books a month are basically, I mean, you're busy guys. How many books a month are you guys managing to read each?
Oh, books a month to buy? I'd say maybe, I'll say about maybe 25.
Okay, and what about you, Tyler?
I mean, I got a backlog of trades that I'm still working through. So I definitely don't get I get to the comic shop more like once a month than once a week. But I also get, you know, a ton of digital stuff as well.
Yeah.
And in convention season, I can't come home without a stack. So I got plenty of stuff. But I'm digging into older stuff. I'm on my vacation a couple of weeks ago, finally got a chance to plow through the first couple of volumes of Elephant Men, and what a phenomenal series that is.
I gotta try that one. I've heard good things. Yeah.
I at New York Comic Con, I got the first four volumes from Richard Starking just because I, you know, was tired of hearing so much so many good things about it, and just the artists that he gets. And the design sense of that book is something I'll be studying, you know, for years, as someone that's been, you know, in the process of putting together books myself. You know, you can just learn a ton from how he does it. Those books are put together incredibly well.
That's actually a good question for both of you. Tyler, you also, I mean, you're a hell of an artist too. I mean, I got to say this because your graphic novel, Over, I think I called it Alone last episode when you were on, my mistake.
Oh, you might have.
Yeah.
One word titles, thinking.
Yeah, I think I did, but it's Over. Of course, that and is also like all these books we've talked about. That Epic, Runner, Standard, all this stuff you can get online at Comics Tribe, right?
Most of it's still there in stock. Yeah.
And you got some T-shirts and stuff there too. So, hold on. Tears of the Dragon. Tell everyone what that one is.
So, I mean, anybody that wants to read The Dragon, they can read up to where we're at right now at totdcomic.com. So that's a serialized webcomic. It's sort of my love letter to movies like Lord of the Rings, Princess Bride, Willow, epic sword and sorcery fantasy, story within a story. I suffer from genre ADD, Mo, so
that's all right.
I end up bouncing around into different stuff, and that's just it's a
I wanted to add something that's more all ages, more that I could give to kids.
Yeah, over well. Over isn't so much all ages though, is it? It's more of it seemed quite personal though.
No, over. I mean, over is my attempt to do like a Judd Apatow, Kevin Smith type bromantic comedy sort of deal.
All right. So anyways, yeah. The reason I'm bringing this up though is because you mentioned you're reading these books and you're learning. So kind of both of you. When you're picking up your books every month, how much of are you picking up for pure enjoyment, and how much are you picking up to learn and study, and or is it kind of a little? Can you do both at the same time?
Well, if the government's listening, I'm writing off every trip to the comic book shop as research and a business expense. So I'd say 100% is business.
Only the Canadian government is listening. You're safe.
Oh, sweet. The Mounties won't be after me then.
No.
But I will say this. I think if there's a book I'm enjoying, I'm trying to learn what makes it enjoyable and dissect it a little bit. I think that's why there's so many process junkies in comics. It's because, you know, you see what formula someone uses and then you kind of, you know, you want to either taper it for yourself or do something to kind of, you know, make you a better creator. But that's just my thing. I know, like, I look at certain stuff and, you know, I like just off the top of my mind right now, Hawkeye. I'm never going to draw like David Aja, but, you know, I can take so many things from his storytelling and his abilities, and I can then try to put it into my own sensibility when I'm approaching, you know, a page or something like that. So I would think that if I enjoy it, I would buy it. I would hopefully learn from it. And then you have books like Howard Chaykin's Black Kiss that I don't think any of us can even understand.
Yeah, well, I may be a pervert, but not on his level.
Yeah, I literally opened up like the first book of the second series that's out now.
Yeah.
And like a Benny Hill flood of priests and nuns just started smacking me with rulers and holy water.
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the room by myself reading it and looking over my shoulder, making sure nobody's watching.
Oh no, it's from a major publisher, and you know what? It's been you can't get it across the border into Canada anymore after the first issue.
I'm not surprised. I mean, it's pornography.
It is pornography. It is. You know what?
No way around it. But.
There is no way around it. It's the most sexually graphic book from a major publisher I can think of ever. I mean, more so even than From Hell would have been, was sexually very graphic, but this is, you know, I mean.
But Mo, can I ask you this? Would it get into Canada easier if it smelled like bacon and or maple syrup?
Well, no, that would mean it's made here.
Okay. Oh my God, if that's what paper smelled like from Canada, I would get every book printed there.
No shit. Me too. I gave up eating meat about 4 months ago.
On purpose?
Or the things just dry up in the forest outside your house.
Yeah, basically. I really miss it.
They know just not to go near you.
Basically, yeah. They're like, yeah, that guy will eat us. Yeah, I know. But I still have maple syrup. Ah, shit. I miss meat.
Did you really go vegan?
What's that?
Did you really go vegan?
Not vegan, vegetarian. I'll still have some milk or cheese and stuff like that. I'm not full vegan. But yeah, right. No, not even eggs, not chicken or anything like that. Just and nothing that had or could have had a heartbeat.
Really? Is this for health reasons? Obviously there's benefits.
No, not for health reasons. Honest to God, I'm walking my dog. I look down at my dog and I go, you know, those pigs I've been eating, they're definitely smarter than you. Can't do it anymore. That's
you don't want to just get a smarter dog? Keep the bacon and get a smarter dog, man.
Well, she's a cute dog. I love her. But, yeah, kind of a moron. Good point, though. I hadn't thought of that. Well, fuck, I'm going to go have a pepperoni pizza tomorrow.
Seriously. Make that dog watch.
Awesome. All right. Can we do a little speed round here from you guys?
Sure.
This is something I wasn't sure if Tyler was coming on or not tonight. So I was going to ask a few questions of Joe, trying to get some and get to know him about some other subjects. So let's still do that, but let's do it as a speed round here. So let's go. Three. It doesn't have to be your favorite, but three of your favorite movies, Joe, and then Tyler. Go.
Young Frankenstein, Rocky, Boondock Saints.
Tyler.
Die Hard. Die Hard 2. Die Hard with Vengeance.
Three of your favorite bands or musicians. Tyler, go.
Guster. What else? Wu-Tang Clan and Dave Matthews.
Joe.
Wow, that's all over the place. My number one favorite band, hands down, not even a question, is the Pie Tasters. And then number two, I'm going to say Real Big Fish. Number three, I'm going to say Less Than Jake.
Nice. Three comic book characters you don't think people talk about enough. Joe.
Iron Fist, Nightcrawler, and anyone from Scam.
Tyler.
That's a tough one. I'm not good at these speed rounds. I need I need to phone a friend.
Tyler,
Everybody's been raving about Saga, but they haven't really been talking about the characters that much. And I think there's just some great, just nonstop awesome characters in that book. Like, I think the Will is gonna go down as one of like the all time like coolest characters, and just as he continues to do his thing but that would be one, the characters in Saga. Who else? I don't have anybody else. Alf.
Alf's gotta be big.
No problem, Willie. Anyways, all right, Tyler, see if you don't fuck this one up. Let's try this again. Three people you admire. Go.
Gandhi.
Big one.
Joe Mulvey.
And Bo.
Who else? I will say Sean from Action Lab. Great guy. Sean Pryor. He's the one of the guys running the show over at Action Lab, another publisher that's sort of on the rise, up and coming, and sort of doing things the right way, we had the opportunity to meet him at Baltimore and name to watch out for. So Sean Pryor of Action Lab.
And Joe?
I'm going to throw the mutual love back there. I'm going to say Tyler. I genuinely admire Tyler. And for anyone who doesn't know, Tyler is probably the hardest working man in comics. It's insane how much he does in a single day. Plus having, you know, a day job, plus getting, you know, his family, and he's getting married soon and all this stuff. Guy's very, very impressive. No, it's not to your mom.
Oh, okay.
It's very, very impressive. Number two, comics wise, I'm going to say Joe Quesada. Guy that I, you know, saw kind of go up the ranks to editor-in-chief, creative Marvel officer. That's pretty impressive. And number three, I'm going to go Michael J. Fox, because he's Canadian. He keeps shaking, and he keeps going. So God bless that man.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I've heard his new series is going to be a little shaky. But what?
Wow.
Too soon?
No, it's been years. It's fine.
All right. Three cartoon series you used to love. Joe.
Thundercats, Silverhawks, He-Man.
Tyler.
He-Man, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the X-Men. The first one.
All right. Can I ask you guys one that may be a little dangerous? May lead to a little bit of stories?
Go right ahead.
Tyler, before I ask.
Oh, go ahead.
All right. All right. Three things you did you're ashamed of. Tyler. And don't say my mom.
They're probably all around, you know, slapping kids and I was an educator. No. What else? The third grade or the fourth grade basketball team I coached didn't win a single game. and there was one game where the only point we scored was on our own basket. So that would be up there. That's all you're getting from that.
Okay. That's good. I like that. Joe.
Again, I say only three. I mean, you're really timing off here.
Yeah, he's got three things from his trip to Vegas that he's.
I didn't say three things you're proud of. I said three things you're ashamed of.
I'm ashamed that as a kid, I had my family get an infestation of bugs in the house because I never liked the chocolate on an Oreo, so I would eat the vanilla and then throw the cookies under a couch, and they never looked under the couch. And then we got bugs in the house. It was my fault. I went to a party one time, and I peed in an oven. I'm not proud of that. And then I put it on to get rid of the essence. I once threw up in my friend's drawer and closed it and forgot to tell him for several weeks until no girl would ever go back in his room again. Again, I could keep going. I mean, this is almost like confession, so let's just stop.
We're going to do three more down the road. All right. All right, that was good stuff. All right, just one last thing I want to hit before we move on. We invited you, Joe, me and Brett, to join our fantasy football league that's going on, and you said you were in two, and you didn't want to spread yourself too thin. Now, since I'm a guy who was doing 12 fantasy football leagues, I just want to say you're a pussy.
And can I tell you something? The two I'm in is too much because to me, I feel like I have to be on top of things and I don't want to I don't want to be slacking. And I definitely feel like, if it's one, I could concentrate a little bit better. Two isn't the end of the world, but 12 is just – it's just fucking insane.
Yeah.
No, is anybody else feeling the pressure of these new Wednesday games? So now it's
I hate that. I hate that.
Waiver doesn't end until Monday night, and then you got Tuesday, and if you're not making moves then, it's
– Oh, yeah. And what if you want to go out for dinner or something like that, and then there's a last-minute change in the lineup that you need to make and just – it's bullshit. I don't like that at all.
No, it's very annoying. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Just ask you, though, the Jets, 2-1, a little lucky.
One of the worst games I've ever seen played yesterday against the Dolphins.
Yep.
But please, 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 everyone stop begging for fucking Tebow. He is a fullback with a lady's arm. He is not the guy that's going to save the team.
You guys get a lot of over there, you get a lot of within the New York area, you're hearing it a lot. Got to play Tebow. Is it?
Yeah, well, I'll go with this. I'll say that you got to go with him when he's in the red zone because he will throw people off in defensive patterns. But for God's sakes, Mark Sanchez, everyone likes to fucking bash on Mark Sanchez. The guy's got a good arm, and he's never been taught once how to actually be a fucking quarterback by any coach.
No, that's true. I don't know what you're thinking, but I know after week one, and Rex Ryan said, oh, that's what you're going to see all the time. We're just kind of basically playing possum in the preseason. I pretty much looked at it and went, no fucking way. Mark Sanchez is not the guy that he was in week one, and he hasn't been since in the last 2 weeks.
No, but week to week, game plans are different, and he had a lot of drop passes, in this week's game, and I mean, I'm just not a guy that gives up on a quarterback just yet, even though, when you're in a league against Tom Brady and Tom Brady's always beating you and you share a town with Eli Manning, who's got two rings, the news gets a little tighter, but I still got faith in Mark.
Hey, Patriots only 1-2 themselves, so You know what? That said, what about Revis's injury?
Soul-crushing and defeating, and it's the biggest loss you could have had on their team.
How about you, Tyler? Who are you cheering for?
I am a Dallas Cowboys fan.
You're a Dallas Cowboys fan. What do you think of the Cowboys?
I think the Dallas false starts. We're lucky to get a win this past week.
Yeah.
And
I think they're also fortunate to be 2-1, much like much
well,
like
they
the
have
Jets.
The benefit of a, well, you know, it's every year I hope it's going to be one of those years that's not just week to week. You don't know what you're going to get, but it looks like it's going to be another one of those years, which is, you know.
I personally don't like Garrett. I don't like Garrett as a head coach, personally.
You know, I've given him a long, long rope. But if you can't get your team, you know, to do the fundamentals, it's hard for me to really root for you. So he's pretty much got this season, as far as I'm concerned, and then it's time to start thinking about going elsewhere. But We'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, Romo's been a little bit shaky this year, but
much like Michael J. Fox.
There you go. I believe.
I'm allowed to say that because he's Canadian, and so am I.
That's true.
Yeah, you guys can't say it. Just like none of us can use the N word.
Norwegian.
But I did like this. I do think they have the backfield straightened out.
Yeah.
With
yeah. I like DeMarco Murray, good player.
Yeah.
Well, that's a start. All right, guys. Do your final plugs. Anything you guys want to say, and I'll take up enough of your time. I know Tyler James says that it's only over there. What is it? 11:30. You only have about 40 more things to do in the next half hour before the day ends.
That is true.
Very, very true.
And you'll probably get 37 or 38 of them done.
I'm gonna mix up some things, and I'm gonna plug for Tyler James. I'm gonna say, make sure you check out the Red 10, which the preview is in scam number 3. So don't short yourself on that. Sorry, scam number 2. Make sure you check out scam number Red 10. I'm doing a horrible job, by the way. Red
take
10
two.
Number
take
1.
Take 2, Joe.
Red 10 number 1 in October's previews. It's going to be stellar. It's the first month that we're going to have 2 books in previews. Scam number 3, Red 10 number 1. Check that out. Hit him up at Tyler James Comic on Twitter. You will see.
I would,
him
but he blocked me.
Well, a lot of people do. Ever since we heard you went veggie, you know, we're all fucking a little weary.
I'm big on anti-immigration, so
I've never forgiven you for that, even though I know it wasn't your fault. It was Twitter. Still, never forgiven you for that.
Well, that's all right. I'll live.
Go to comicstrap.com and check out all the stuff that's going on over there.
All right. And Tyler, your plugs.
Yeah, thanks. I've managed to get about 20 oxymoron sketch cards for my fulfillment done during this podcast. So, you know, I'm a multitasker. But, yeah, the big thing is New York Comic Con. Check out comicstrap.com. We've got all the details there. We're giving out 100 free sketch cards to people that are going to the show. So, you know, sign up for that list on the website. Wear a Comics Tribe T-shirt to New York Comic Con. Get $15 worth of merchandise for free at the table.
What do they get if they show up at their table and say, I heard I should come over to you because I listen to Mojo on the We Talk Podcast Network?
They will get a special surprise. That is all I will say.
Is it a kiss on the cheek from you?
I wouldn't even go that far. They will get a special, special surprise.
All right.
It's a special handshake that ends in underwear. That's all I can say.
Excellent.
Pretty much all there is to it.
Pretty much all there is to it. And on that stellar note,
live it, love it.
We're OUT. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Good night.